Hello, I'm Dr. Eleanor Pierce. I'm a research fellow in the Division of Psychiatry at University College London, and I coordinate the Loneliness and Social Isolation in Mental Health Research Network, which is funded by the UKRI. And our team looked at loneliness as an active ingredient in interventions to reduce anxiety and depression in young people. So we were interested, if you intervene to reduce loneliness, whether that can prevent the onset of anxiety and depression in 14 to 24 year olds, and whether if you address loneliness, that can help with anxiety and depression in young people who are already experiencing those. And what we were interested in is what kind of interventions to address loneliness work for who, so in what context, and why that might be the case. And also what interventions don't work for particular young people and why that might be the case. And loneliness is a mismatch between how someone sees their relationships, their actual relationships, and the kind of relationships that they want to have. So what we're trying to do is address and reduce that sense of a mismatch between how you'd like your social world to be and how you think it is.
Welcome, Ellie, to the podcast. I think this is really interesting, and it's great. This is one of the active ingredients that was looked at as part of this work. There's been this huge explosion over the last decade, I guess, about loneliness and its relationship to mental health and physical health. So what is it particularly that made you decide to focus on this active ingredient, on trying to reduce loneliness to help relieve youth mental health?
So loneliness seems to be relatively high in 16 to 24 year olds, and there's evidence that loneliness can predict later anxiety and depression. So data which is longitudinal, looking over time, has found that if you're lonely as a child, for instance, then you're more likely to develop anxiety and depression later on. And there also seems to be a reciprocal relationship. So if you're socially anxious, you're also more likely to become lonely later on. So because there seems to be this association between loneliness and anxiety and depression over time, we thought that if you addressed loneliness, then that might reduce the risk of developing anxiety and depression later on. So we're very excited to see whether loneliness could be an active ingredient in preventing anxiety and depression later on. Previous evidence has found that children who are lonely are more likely to become depressed and anxious later on, up to 24 years later. And also there seems to be a reciprocal relationship over time between loneliness and social anxiety. So young people who feel lonely are more likely to develop social anxiety later on. But at the same time, those who are socially anxious are also more likely to become lonely later on. So we were interested to see whether, if you address loneliness, does that reduce the risk of developing depression and anxiety later on? But also, if you try and address loneliness in those already experiencing depression and anxiety, does that improve their mental health? So does that help with the depression and anxiety?
How good is this evidence linking loneliness to mental illness in young people? Can we say that loneliness causes mental illness in young people, or that mental illness in young people causes loneliness? Or do we just know that there's some kind of correlation there?
So these data are longitudinal, so they are looking over time. So if a young person is lonely, then they're more likely to develop, for example, depression later on. But there is also evidence that the relationship is reciprocal. So, and also this is something that came out with talking to our young people who were involved in the project, so our lived experience advisory group, where we talked quite a lot about this chicken and egg problem. So some of them definitely did feel that their loneliness had started first, then their mental health challenges developed later on, and other people were the other way around. So I think at this point, we don't know, but I think it seems like it can happen either way, and it depends on the individual.
I mean, it's very plausible, isn't it, this hypothesis that if we try and reduce loneliness, we're going to have a positive impact on people's mental health. So what research is there? What did you find with this review? And did the evidence that you find, that you found rather, support your initial views about loneliness as an intervention?
Well, we should probably start by saying that many of the studies didn't measure anxiety and depression as well as loneliness. I think we need a lot more studies that measure all three and do that over time. So we searched, we kind of have various different strands of evidence that we drew together. So we searched the published academic literature for both quantitative studies and qualitative studies that give kind of more depth and more nuance in their findings. We also looked at unpublished evidence from third sector organisations, so charities who are working with young people to try and address loneliness, and also some kind of policy reports. And we used unpublished master's dissertations that were interviews with charity workers about what they thought was underlying loneliness and what they thought might help. And we also talked to this group of brilliant young people about their experiences of loneliness and mental ill health and what had helped them. And we drew those together in a kind of iterative process with feedback with the young people to create this framework. And as I said, I think we found, I think it was three or four kind of larger sample randomized controlled trials looking at interventions to address loneliness in the context of mental health, which isn't very many to base a robust conclusion on. So a lot of these studies were feasibility or pilot studies where you can't really say that much about the effectiveness of the intervention. But what we could do was identify strategies, interventions that warrant further development and testing, so kind of promising interventions with potential, looking at feasibility and acceptability, so particularly looking at qualitative evidence on that. And we came up with this framework which looked at particular strategies might work for. And I'm using the word strategies because we not only included formal interventions, but also kind of less formal kind of coping strategies, either raised by the young people or particularly in the kind of charity websites, kind of top tips that charities were giving young people who were feeling lonely. So that's why I'm using the word strategies. So we looked at the context of these strategies, kind of, so thinking about what the different causes of loneliness might be, and thinking about, given those different causes, what might work for someone who, for example, is feeling lonely because of intrapersonal factors, so individual level factors like experiencing anxiety and depression, low self-esteem, wanting to withdraw, very negative comparisons with others. We also thought about interpersonal reasons why people might be lonely. So for example, feeling a lack of confidence in social situations, or not feeling like you have the social skills that you need in order to interact with others. And then we thought about social factors underlying loneliness. So if you're physically isolated, for example, if you're in hospital, you might not have close friends and family who you can engage with easily. You might not have family support, and also you might feel like you don't belong to a community. So we looked at what strategies we thought might help young people experiencing those different kinds of loneliness. And each of those kind of underlying factors of loneliness might come about from different situations. So for example, a young person moving school or moving university might not have close friends in that new situation, but equally someone who's hospitalized might not have close friends around, or a refugee might not have close friends nearby. So that's how we sort of looked at what works for who rather than specific demographic groups, if that makes sense, like students, for example. Then we looked at the kind of key elements of different strategies. So a really key element was that they needed to be personalised and they needed to be co-designed. So this was something that our young people really emphasised, and it was also emphasised in the charity evidence that we looked at. So that different strategies might work for different individuals and for the same individual over time. So some examples are young people we worked with said that in their experience, therapy was really helpful to then allow them to take advantage of social opportunities in the community. So they didn't feel able to, I don't know, join a football club or go to an art class until they'd had some therapy. But equally, there was a case study that we looked at where suggesting that the therapeutic process was much more beneficial because this individual had very strong support from their close relationships. And one of the strategies we looked at was an online app called Entourage for social anxiety, and that personalized the kind of therapeutic suggestions and the activities based on the individual's strength profile. So it was a positive psychology approach, but they also had peer mentors and kind of clinicians to provide social support. So they sort of had different approaches combined and a personalized approach. And that came up in some of the other active ingredients projects as well, the need for co-design. So I thought that was really interesting. And then other key elements were intrapersonal elements like therapy or self-help. So things like journaling or a mindfulness app, for example, or going running. Then we had interpersonal strategies that helped with increasing social skills and social confidence, and then social strategies that either sought to provide social support, so for example through mentoring, or particularly having an adult who a young person could really develop trust with. So the charities in particular talked about having staff that were there for a long time so that young people could build up a trusting relationship with them and could have positive role models. And then also opportunities for social engaging, so for example through group music therapy or sport. And then we also thought about the different mechanisms through which these kind of key elements of these strategies might work. So to just give you highlights of the key ones, a really important one that came out both in our in discussion with our young people, but also in the academic literature, both in the qualitative and the quantitative data, was that what really helped in terms of a social mechanism was talking to others who had the same experience of you. For example, having a parent with mental ill health, or being a university student with autism spectrum disorder. So talking to other people who could really relate to how you were feeling seemed to be a very key mechanism by which particular interventions helped. And what I found really interesting was that this was also reflected in our group of young people. So I sort of at the end asked for feedback on how they'd found the process. They just really enjoyed the opportunity to talk to other young people who had experienced mental ill health and loneliness, and they could share their experiences and what strategies had helped them. And it actually felt like they'd bonded through sharing these shared experiences, and a kind of strong factor in underlying a lot of their loneliness was having an experience which they felt like they couldn't share with their friends because the friends hadn't shared those same experiences. So that was a very key mechanism. And also things like developing social confidence and developing a better relationship with oneself also came out very strongly, building a positive self-identity. And then in terms of what factors might prevent a strategy helping someone, the barriers included individual level hurdles, such as an individual not wanting to be a burden, so they don't discuss how they're feeling with others, kind of denying that that they were having difficulties, was something that our lived experience young people suggested. Practical barriers, particularly in terms of accessibility, so not having the financial resources to take advantage of community activities. Also there not being community activities that a young person wants to engage with locally. And also, I think probably particularly during COVID, digital barriers, so not having the technology or the data to kind of join in with online activities. And also social barriers, so stigma both of loneliness and of mental ill health was something that was really emphasised in our lived experience group. And a lot of the charities advocated anti-bullying strategies, although we didn't find any academic interventions looking at those.
I think it'd be worth just talking a little bit more about the youth advisors and their involvement in this and how it worked, and also how that was different from how you've done these sorts of reviews in the past. I'm very interested in this thing you touched on there about the stigma of loneliness. You know, it's very, obviously having a mental illness is stigmatizing. It feels like loneliness is a whole new level of stigma, admitting to being lonely versus admitting to being depressed and doing them together. You know, so what did those young people bring and how did you find?
I loved it. It was brilliant. They were so engaged and had such brilliant ideas. I thought it was wonderful. So I guess what they really brought to it was perspectives on what might help, what might underlie loneliness and what might help that we didn't find in the literature. So we actually met with our lived experience group right at the beginning, and the kind of themes that we drew out from our conversation with them really guided us starting to develop our framework. And we kind of looked at, you know, do the things that they think are important come up in the literature? And there were a couple of things that didn't actually. So they really emphasized that what had helped them with loneliness had been developing a more positive relationship with themselves. So it wasn't necessarily social engagement or, you know, getting more friends or, you know, working on your existing relationships with others. It was very much about, for instance, journaling and getting to know yourself better and accepting yourself better. I thought that was really interesting. That was something that did come up in the literature a little bit, but something that didn't was the emphasis placed on family or home environment and whether or not someone had family support. So that could be both in terms of cultural issues around a family kind of denying that mental health issues are an issue, like kind of not thinking that mental ill health is a thing, to parents being very certain that a particular strategy is going to help their child and the young person not feeling that it's appropriate. So almost kind of the other extreme. So home environments and whether or not they're supportive. And that wasn't something that we really found in the academic literature. There weren't any interventions in what we looked at about working with families and family relationships and trying to, intervene in terms of family support. Maybe there are interventions in kind of other domains that do that, but we didn't find that in terms of loneliness. So that was something that I kind of expected to find, given after discussing this with the young people, but that we didn't. So that was really interesting. And also stigma was the other thing that came up a lot in talking to the young people, and we didn't find any interventions that try to address that. So I guess kind of normalizing that most people feel lonely at some point in their lives, and it's often linked to transitions, and we kind of expect that as part of the human condition. We didn't find any interventions trying to educate young people, teachers, community organizations working with young people about loneliness and mental ill health. But that was advocated in particularly the charity literature, but in the academic literature, we didn't find that.
It feels like this review has brought together a really wide variety of types of evidence and has kind of drawn a line in the sand and said, you know, this is what we know currently about this topic. But actually, there's much more that's unknown about this topic than known. I guess you're talking, when you're thinking about implications, you're probably thinking more about future research questions than actually things we can do right now in practice. What's your sense of what we can do now with the evidence?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So just to quickly, I will come back to that, but I just want to highlight two gaps in the research. So one is that we would expect, so we know that loneliness is associated with cognitive biases, which are things like interpreting an ambiguous social situation as threatening. We know that these biases are linked to loneliness, but there weren't any psychological interventions looking at that in young people, at least. So that, I think, is a really important area for future work. And also the built environment. How our buildings and neighbourhoods are designed, that was something that was highlighted by academics and in the policy and third sector literature. And wasn't something that we found. So I think those two are definitely key areas, as well as the kind of family support element that I talked about before, where more testing is definitely needed. In terms of what we can do now, I think what we've set out is a framework of kind of key aspects of strategies that might help young people address loneliness, anxiety, and depression. And I think a young person could, or someone thinking about helping a young person could look at our framework and sort of get a better sense of what might help them, given the kind of examples of the different kinds of strategies. And I think that will help with the kind of co-designing a way to help a particular individual. You know, there are kind of, I guess what I'm saying is there are kind of examples of what's already being done, and a young person could use that to think about, oh yeah, okay, journaling sounds like a good thing, I'll try that, kind of the idea of therapy being a good gateway into other more social strategies. So kind of working on your relationship with yourself before joining a football club or something. And I think also the young people gave really interesting insights. So they did a commentary on our paper, and they talked about things like having a meaningful job as a way of getting a sense of purpose, and that was really helpful in loneliness, in addressing loneliness and mental ill health. And things like volunteering was another thing that some of them had found helpful. So I think there are kind of hints in there of the range of strategies that might help different people, but we still don't know specifically what works for who and why, and what doesn't work for who and why. But I think this is a very good first step to know which strategies need more testing and developing.
And do you buy in finally to the kind of broad media perspective on this, which is that society is going down the pan and that's why we're all lonely and that's why we're seeing this kind of explosion? You know, family units are breaking down, community cohesion is breaking down. You know, we don't look after each other anymore in our neighbourhoods. Do you buy into that, or do you think that's just a bit of a tabloid interpretation of what's really going on?
So that's really interesting. So some people in our research network are historians, so they bring a historical perspective on this. And according to their work, there have been these kind of epidemics of loneliness kind of throughout recorded history, or, you know, when they look back. So for instance, I think when the telephone first came out, or when the radio first came out, there was a big hoo-ha about this was going to cause huge loneliness. So I feel like maybe the things that we're concerned about in society at each time period, there's a bit of a panic that it's going to create complete disarray and loneliness and breakdown of community. I also think that there are different kinds of loneliness. So there are sort of three different kinds. So the first one is emotional loneliness. So that's where you're missing an intimate relationship. So for instance, through bereavement or a relationship breakdown. Then the social loneliness, which is about not feeling part of a social network or community. And then there's existential loneliness, which is not really knowing your place in the world, not really having a sense of purpose. So I think it's a bit complicated to just look at, it's a bit simplistic to look at, think of loneliness as one single thing. So I guess you could argue that the breakdown of the family is maybe linked to emotional loneliness, but I don't think that's the whole picture at all. And not kind of knowing your neighbours, maybe that's creating social loneliness. But again, I think there's more to it than that. But existential loneliness, I think, has probably been a key part of being human forever. Sort of, you know, not wanting to know what your place is in the world.